Last year, the University of Washington College Republicans invited Milo Yiannopoulos to campus. Yiannopoulos is a right-wing conservative, a provocative speaker whose speeches often draw protests. The night he spoke at the University of Washington, those protests turned violent. You can hear people calling medic. That happened after a man was shot and injured. This year, when the college Republicans decided to hold a rally with another conservative group, the Patriot Prayer Group, the university said, you need to help cover the costs of security, of making this a safe event. And that's a $17,000 cost. The college Republicans' lawyer, Bill Becker, says that fee is unconstitutional.
The university is charging an exorbitantly excessive fee to the college Republicans based on the fear that there will be violent disruptors at this event. No other group, to our knowledge, has ever been charged anything even close to that amount.
I talked about this with an education professor at the University of Pennsylvania. Segal Ben-Porath is author of the book Free Speech on Campus, and I asked her whether she thinks high administrative and security fees can impede the free speech rights of students on college campuses.
So I do agree that it's a problem when we are using administrative tools such as security fees or sometimes, you know, room reservation regulations or various tricks like that in order to bar speakers from coming, right? That's definitely can be understood as a way to infringe on their rights to open expression. But I do have to say that this is a group that has some prior recent history of complicated events where even there was a, you know, actual risks to safety for participants.
Yes, someone got shot at one of these rallies on the UW campus. It's a real fear.
Right. And the person who's invited to speak also has a history of inciting or provoking violence on other campuses. And so while that might be a reason maybe at non-public universities to actually try and avoid the event altogether, at a public university, the effort is really to maintain neutrality and make sure that anybody can express their opinion more freely, right? There is more stringent requirements from public universities. So they are trying to accommodate, but it's a costly affair, and it's costly because of the recent history of this speaker and this group. I don't see this as an effort. And again, I'm not naive. There are sometimes cases where universities or various administrators would try to use administrative practices to actually avoid or prevent an event from taking place. I don't think this is the case here. I think it's a costly event. I think there are real concerns. It's taking place on the weekend, which in some places might mean overtime costs for security forces, etc. So I think the university is trying to be accommodating within the boundaries of what makes sense according to their policies. I assume that a group that would have been protesting based on some left-leaning ideology or progressive ideology and would have had a similar history and incurred similar costs would also be presented with a similar pay request. I don't see this as barring speech.
Professor, you used the phrase provoking violence, that a speaker could provoke violence. But is that fair to the speaker to penalize them for a violent reaction from other people to their ideas? Is the speaker provoking violence, or should we be putting the responsibility on others to listen peacefully? Or don't listen at all, that's their right.
Right, that's a completely fair question. And I agree that sometimes the response from others might be the actual issue or the actual concern. And it is not fair to say, well, you are making me mad, and so I'm yelling at you, and now that's going to be your problem to resolve the response that I had.
If I know that I can make a rally expensive by threatening violence, couldn't I use that as a tool to silence other people, in effect, because the security fee is so high they can't afford it and there's no rally?
Right. I agree with you that this is a concern. So the effort should really be to try and make sure that we are using our policies in a fair and equitable way. Again, with a group and a speaker that has a history of clashes, and when this is a speech or an event which is marginal to the general mission of the university, this is not the main reason why people go to college, right? This is maybe an activity that they do, you know, it's an event that they want to hold. The whole thing is marginal to the university, and therefore incurring large costs for permitting it, I think, is quite a large demand from taxpayers, right? I would assume that taxpayers would rather that the university used its resources, its limited resources, for aspects of its work that are more central to its role. However, you know, it's true that the provocation of violence, or the violent response, as you are saying, the strong response from some people in the audience should not be used as a way to silence speakers, right? So we need to figure out a way to balance our responses. We have to remember that the right to speech is not a right that has no bounds. There is always, for any right, including the right to free speech, there are boundaries. You know, you cannot use threatening words. You cannot say things about me in public that are not true, because that's, you know, you can be blamed for libel. I mean, there are things that people are not permitted to say and ways that they are not permitted to act in public. We are trying to protect a broad sphere of free speech on campus to the best extent possible, while taking into account our other considerations, our educational considerations, cost needs, the need to maintain public safety, etc. So all of these together, again, are at the hands of the judge. I'm not going to adjudicate the case. This is something for the court to decide right now as it's being debated. But in my view and my understanding of the role of free speech on college campuses, I think it's very important to remember that campuses cannot take the responsibility for resolving all of these public tensions around ideological differences on campus at their own cost.
Well, I suppose one way the University of Washington could handle this would be to say, well, we have public space. Red Square is belongs to the public. The only equitable thing to do is to eat all of the security costs. Sorry, taxpayers, but free speech is, turns out, not free. It's very expensive.
Right. I mean, this would be another way to act in a neutral way, is to allow everybody to speak whenever they want. Of course, the concern might be that either there would be a significant price to pay in public safety, or even more readily, there is going to be significant disruption to classes, to the normal operation of the university. That's usually not a concern on a Saturday. But if you just say that Red Square is for anybody to use anytime, then you can start seeing regular clashes, or, you know, more active and sometimes not necessarily peaceful engagement with the public. It would be neutral, but I don't know that it would be particularly supportive of the mission of the university to conduct research and to conduct, you know, its educational purpose in a peaceful manner. And I'm not even sure that it's good for letting students participate in, you know, in practicing their civic roles. I think regulations and rules about how you participate in a public debate are pretty appropriate any place, and they are definitely appropriate for a campus community.
How have other universities tackled this same free speech security cost question?
This actually has been an ongoing issue on multiple university campuses in the past year or two. generally speaking, all campuses require that, or almost all campuses require that student organizations and groups incur the costs for speakers that they are bringing or events that they are holding, especially ones, again, that are part of their social or outside of class work rather than something that is directly educational. So you can see that when speakers, for example, more recently came to the University of Florida, the cost was over $500,000, right? So this is a significant price that was paid for the police and other safety measures that were required, as well as requiring the cancellation of classes. And over there, we also saw people, unfortunately, using firearms, although luckily nobody was hurt.
And the group that wanted the rally came up with $500,000?
No, this was actually a cost that the Florida courts required, after all, the university to pay that cost, which means that it was rolled over to Florida taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very difficult circumstance that the university was placed at. The university claimed that it couldn't actually cover this from its regular budget, which is why it requested to postpone or cancel the events. But the court, the local court in Florida, did not permit that. So we'll have to see what the court in Seattle decides to do with this particular cost. The sum is different, right? So the challenge is different, but the question is similar, right? And in many places, when the sum is such that it is deemed as something that can be covered in some way or even in some shared way by the student, the relevant student group, or even by the speaker that is being invited and their funders or their supporters, then the request is indeed most commonly that the student group or organization covers the cost of the events that they want to hold.
Professor, campus protests obviously are not new. They've been around a long, long time. But what is it? What is happening these last couple of years where we're seeing these in Seattle and Berkeley and elsewhere, these real inflamed campus protests?
So you're completely right, Bill, that this is not a new phenomenon in itself. We had riots at Berkeley and in other universities going back to the Vietnam War and many times after that. So seeing students participate or enact their civic and political commitments in more public ways, that's definitely nothing new. And I think it's actually an important and very positive aspect, usually, of a normal college education that you receive. It's an opportunity to develop and express your political viewpoint. However, we are seeing in the last couple of years, 2 or 3 years, that campuses are actually not self-contained in this way. This is not anymore something that students are doing in response to political events around them. Rather, campuses are becoming more and more places where outside forces, broader political forces that are not part of the campus life itself, are playing or are enacting their differences, right? And so the campus is becoming a training ground, not for students, but for outside media companies, outside political parties, and outside groups looking to either use the campus as a way to illustrate a broader political point, usually, a populist point or sometimes a different point of view, trying to use the campus and use students' groups as places or spaces or contexts where these tensions will play out. So the campuses themselves are not so much the originating parties to these events as they used to be in the past. Instead, they are becoming pawns in the bigger culture war that is being played around the country today.
We've been talking with University of Pennsylvania Professor of Education and Political Science, Sigal Ben-Porath. She's written the book, Free Speech on Campus, And that is certainly a relevant topic in Seattle this week and this weekend, as the College Republicans have invited the Patriot Prayer Group to the UW. Professor, thank you very much for this time.
Thank you for having me.